Hi, this is David Howard Thornton, but you might know me as Art the Clown from the movie Terrifier, and you're listening to the Night of the Living Dreads podcast. Kill you later.
Here we go. Here we go. I'm Otis B. Dreads. And of course, we have Jackal Monkey riding shotgun tonight. It is not a trio as it has been. Mrs. Dreads is here, but she's running around playing fucking Betty Crocker. You'll probably hear her slamming dishes in the background, or maybe you won't. Hopefully, we won't. But it doesn't matter. She's trying to get a little festive, you know, getting the Krampus is actually playing on the TV, which is ironic because that's going to be something that we're going to start the show off with here in just a few minutes. Welcome, everyone. This is episode 86, and we're just cruising right on along. We got, what, about 10 days, 11 days or something, you know?
Until 11 days till Christmas.
God, I don't even want to think about it.
Damn it.
Oh, I don't even want to think about it. But anyway, you know, I guess it's the end of 2020. And, you know, 2020 is bad enough. Our podcast is not as bad as 2020 has been to us. I can guarantee that. So go check it out over there at nightofthelivingdreads.com. Dreads with no A if you're not familiar with how we spell around this joint. And you can also, you know, a lot of people are getting their podcasts now from different, you know, other podcasts, you know, I guess sites, hosting sites, you know, places like Stitcher and Spotify, which coincidentally enough, bam, those two searches, Night of the Living Dreads over there, both Spotify and Stitcher, you can listen there. And of course, the group. We have a page and a group. The group is where all the good stuff happens. That's where they hand out the really good medication.
That's where the
comedian comes out and everyone. No, we have a good time over there, and we also will post the podcast, all the new episodes. We post on both of those, and those usually come out Wednesdays is when I like to get them out. So look forward to when you guys are listening to this. It will be Wednesday at some point. It is not as we're recording it, but oh my goodness. Why don't you also tell us, Jackal Monkey, because you have a nice little a talent, you know.
When
it comes to like mask and keeping the, you know, the horror vibe alive, tell us a little bit about that.
Oh yeah, I mean it's a little too late now to get anything from me before Christmas,
right.
But you can always put in an order. I'm always willing to do it. I do custom masks, mostly Friday the 13th hockey masks, but I can do any kind of custom face mask as far as, you know, anything latex. Yeah. I do body parts, different kinds of props, fake axes. You know, that sort of thing. So,
awesome.
Nightmare Ninja Studios on Facebook. Check me out. See anything you like, let me know. Send me a message, and I'll make your nightmares a reality.
There you go. Oh, that's good. That's a good little tagline. And I'm going to tell you what, man. I can actually, you know, attest to your work. I have a Michael Myers mask. That I've just here recently got from you. Because that's your little paint job, ain't it?
Yeah, I totally repainted that and redid the hair on it. Because, I mean, the hair that was on it, oh my God, it was atrocious. I mean,
some of them are really bad, yeah.
Yes, and some of them are great. I mean, I've seen some of them that come out, you know, that they're not, I mean, they don't look bad. I mean, by any means, but some of them, it's just like, geez, Louise, what the hell happened here?
Yeah, yeah. I got one that was supposed to be, you know, kind of like a replica of like the 2018 one that came out, the Blumhouse.
Yeah.
And no, what I mean, the face, okay. And the hair looked like, you know, his hair, somebody put a crimper on it, you know,
yeah.
It's like all wavy. Like, I was like, when the fuck did Michael Myers start crimping his fucking hair?
When did he get fucking wavy hair?
Right.
What the hell's going on
here? What is happening? And then I got one and paid pretty much about the same price. There's a local Halloween store, that's, you know, the guy who owns it pretty much, you know, he owns a bunch of realty here, you know, in this city. And
yeah.
He's got a lot of cool shit. And I went and paid right around the same amount for like an older looking 1978 Michael Myers mask. And the hair's good. The you know, the white face, you know, it looks really good. It's the one that I would always wear when, you know, I don't know if I ever worn one. I don't know if you've ever seen it. But anyway, yeah, you got to, you know, buyer beware. But you know, I don't think you have to worry about that with you, Jackal Monkey, man. I'm happy with my Michael Myers mask, and you're actually working on a little Jason mask as we speak, aren't you? Well, not as we speak.
A few actually. Yeah, a few of them actually.
That's
working on one of them for a buddy of mine, and one for you actually.
Sweet.
So.
I can't wait. I do have one kind of a cheaper, you know, replica. I'd like to have a good, sturdy, you know, nicely made one, you know.
This one's badass. And like, as I get all my blanks from 6 feet of separation.
Okay.
And Jeremiah over there, he's an absolute badass. He has different grades, different types of plastic that you can actually get your mask, your blanks from him with, which a lot of the other people that offer blanks, they don't do that.
Right, right. But, so is it kind of like a protection for the actual blank itself, like a layer of protection kind of deal? What is it?
Not really. There's the ones that I like to use is polystyrene, which I mean it's kind of softer a little bit, but it's way stronger than just regular resin, and it doesn't have nearly the flex that the PET G masks have.
Mm-hmm.
Like the clear plastic ones, because a lot of them they'll be like a clear plastic. You know, and they'll have a lot of flex to them, but
gotcha.
This one, I mean, there's not really hardly any flex, and it's hard as a rock. Like, it's badass.
So the durability is there. Awesome. Well, I can't wait to get mine. And was it Nightmare Ninja Studios? Did I get that right?
Yes, sir.
Awesome.
Nightmare Ninja Studios.
Sweet. And hey, maybe we'll drop their Facebook page down in the description for this here podcast. This here
Hell
episode.
Yeah.
I tell you what, because you're from Texas, which is where our main topic is going to come from. But we'll get to that here just momentarily. In the meantime. In the meantime, we're gonna talk a little Krampus. Just a little bit. It is, as we mentioned, you know, what about 11 days until the fun holiday of Christmas. And I came across this little article from ScreenRant.com. That says says that my music is not cooperating with me. you know, they're supposed to be for dramatic effect, and it did not work out as planned. Anyway, it is back, and here we go. ScreenRant.com. You know, was there any truth about the legend of Krampus from the movie in 2015, which ironically Mrs. Dredge is watching now the movie Krampus, which is said to be probably one of the most popular horror Christmas movies out there. That is usually, you know, up there in most people's, you know, top five, top three. It's definitely in my top three. So, but you know, did they get anything, you know, right or wrong, or what did they get right and wrong? And it turns out that they really did a good job. The director, Michael Dougherty, they said that he was relatively accurate when it came to Krampus's origins.
And
you've seen this, you've seen, you know, the movie Krampus. This guy's kind of like, what he kind of goes off with the whole half goat, half fucking person type deal, right?
Right, like the satyrs, like there was the old pagan gods and stuff. Mm-hmm. Some of them, you know, the old pagan gods, they had horn gods that were, a lot of them were mischievous and kind of evil, which, I mean, it kind of fits,
I guess it does. There were some funny things that I came across looking into researchers have looked into, you know, this whole folklore, Krampus, that is, and some would say, and I thought this was humorous, I don't know if you've come across this little fact, but some say that, you know, actually depicts Santa Claus in a sleigh, okay, but with a little side cart extending off of the sleigh that fucking Krampus sits in. I swear,
the gruesome twosome.
Right, man. It's like the twins of evil or something.
But wait, I thought Santa was good.
Right.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, he has Krampus riding fucking shotgun with his wicker basket full of fucking either kids or switches or soon to be kids. This guy was pretty brutal. But, you know, honestly, is Krampus really all that bad? Because kids would act up, even if you threatened, Santa Claus isn't going to bring you no toys, or he's going to give you a lump of coal. Did that really fucking work at all? I have kids. You have a daughter. Does that work?
Hell no. I mean, whenever I was a kid, my grandma used to get me with, go get me a switch off the tree in the backyard. I'm going to meet you. I mean, he's doing the same thing. I mean,
except
for the whole dragging them to hell. I mean,
my mom didn't have that much time. Christmas was a busy time, and she had a lot of things to prepare for. She didn't have time to go to hell and back.
Too much stuff to do.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, it's like, no. So it's like it didn't work by using Santa Claus, the good guy, as kind of a tool to whip these kids into acting right. So no, now we have a half goat, half man, demonic, what they call the Christmas devil. Okay, who will kidnap you, drag you to fucking hell, beat you with sticks and twigs, throw you in a bag. I mean, there's different things that, you know, different, you know, parts of Europe would have different versions of the folklore. But the one that's most commonly known here in the States, you know, what we've probably all heard is what they say is very accurately portrayed in the 2015 movie Krampus. Which I thought was pretty cool, man. That they kind of stuck true to, you know, that whole deal.
Yeah, true to the roots from where the actual folklore and everything. Yeah,
right. So there you go. If you haven't seen 2015's Krampus, and I keep having to put it that way, the very first Krampus. There's a lot of little spin-offs that are very lackluster. They're not good. I mean, if you can stomach it,
Krampus Unleashed.
Krampus, yeah. Oh my God. And then they have one called Krampus the Origins, and then they have was it Mother Krampus?
Yeah, Mother Krampus.
No, they actually have
that
two.
That one's got a sequel too.
It does. So your night can be full of Krampus, not all worth the watch. You remember, you won't get that time back, but you can walk away and say, yeah, that movie sucked, but I stuck it out and I watched all of it.
I toughed it out
and and yeah, I don't get that time back. Anyway, let's go right into who we're going to talk about. You actually brought this to my attention because it's actually not too far from you know, where you call home, which I think I might have briefly mentioned, you know, Texas.
Right outside Waco.
So why don't you tell me, because we're gonna be talking about old Kenneth McDuffin stuff.
H.R. McDuffin stuff.
It should be K.A. because I think it's Kenneth right. Allen McDuff. K.A. Right. McDuffin stuff. Against serial killer from the Waco area and surroundings. You know, he said at least 14 murders he's suspected of. I think the range is like 9 to 14. Why don't you give us you know, a little rundown on this guy? Is this like one of those, you know, it's kind of cool, I think, anyway, but that's just how mind works, that, you know, if I know that, okay, wow, 20 miles from, you know, my house, maybe there was a serial killer.
Right, that's what got me, was, you know, something local, because you know what I mean. I had a buddy of mine whenever I moved, where I moved out here, Chris Big Nasty Lopez,
Nasty.
He was old Big Nasty. Shout out to old Big Nasty. Yeah, he was. We were talking about serial killers, and he was like, you know, there's a serial killer from here, right? And I was like, no way. Sure enough, yeah. He's like, yeah, his name was Kenneth Allen McDuff, and started looking into it, and yeah, dude, this guy's a fucking monster, like, and it's crazy, because, all right, like, his first victims, he killed three people back in 66, right?
Right.
All right, him and his buddy went and picked up these three people, he got out of his car. Two guys and a girl.
Right.
They were all like, the girl was 16, you know, her boyfriend, he was 17, and like his cousin, who was like 15.
I
mean, all young, very young teenagers. Makes all of them get in the trunk of their car, gets in their car, has his buddy follow them out to like a secluded area, gets them all out of the trunk, shoots both of the guys. Puts them in the trunk, leaves them, you know, somewhere, leaves them, you know, out in the field, and then they drive off, take the girl to a secluded area where they rape her, torture her with a broomstick, and then he proceeds to choke her to death with the broomstick, like putting it over her throat and just
having a
down,
hand,
like,
on both sides and just kind of crushing like her entire airway, just little by little. What a fucking brutal, excruciating way to fucking you know, take your last breath or your last seconds on earth. My God, because you don't hear. I mean, we've heard. I know I have. A lot of our listeners probably have too. A lot of really interesting ways that serial killers will go about taking their fucking victims, but not so much a broomstick. In fact, that was one of his name.
Not like that.
Yeah, they actually named him the Broomstick Killer.
Yep, and that's where he earned his nickname. Yeah,
wow.
And he ended up getting convicted of that. You know, sentenced to murder. He was sentenced to death. He was supposed to die by the electric chair, but the Supreme Court ended up overturning a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
But all of the inmates that were on death row just gave them life in prison. Which then ended up making them eligible for parole.
Right. Actually, I have this little article from crimemuseum.org about McDuff and stuff, and it says right here as we what we're talking about, as a result of the suspension of the death penalty in 1972 and the overcrowding in Texas prisons, many prisoners were not serving out their full sentences. As a result, McDuff was given parole in October 1989. Although never officially connected, another suspected McDuff victim was Seraphia Parker. Whose body was found 3 days after McDuff was released from prison. And going against, I think their better judgment, because that's a story in a story. This story is like two of them, because you have to look at the Texas judicial system and the whole parole thing. And, they kind of had their hands forced to put dangerous fucking criminals back out on the street, knowing that they are going to kill again. A couple of the sheriffs and people that worked on the parole board was like, we know he's going to kill. We know. It's just a matter of time. And I think it was only, 3-4 days later, what was when they started finding bodies showing up again.
Yeah, 3 days. Yeah, 3 days later. Unbelievable. When he started killing again.
So what's your thoughts on that then? From the legality of it all and how that all, because this case lot bigger than just the brutality of McDuff and the victims that lay in his way.
Oh yeah,
this was shit that changed the laws in Texas.
There were laws changed because of that. They actually the McDuff laws. Actually came into effect because of this shit. Like, I mean,
Duff pass.
Right? I mean, he freaking killed so many freaking people.
Yeah.
Can't even put into words right now.
It's hard to comprehend was just able to walk around.
And what's crazy, I mean, that's the whole thing too, is like the whole, like you were saying, it's the political judicial side. Like, they were just letting people out, 150 criminals a day, know what I mean? And at first, it was just, faulty check riders and car thieves and that sort of thing. But eventually, they can only let out so many.
You're going to run out of them.
And then you're going to get to where you get to the very, very bad people. You get to the McDuffs and the other vile fucking monsters like him. And they got out. Several of them got out. And just wreaked havoc all across fucking Texas.
That's just nuts.
Yeah, it was a very fucking crazy time. I mean, I wasn't alive during that time, but I mean, I was born in 85, so I mean, I was maybe a wee lad at least whenever old McDuff and stuff got out, but. Yeah, I mean, it was like the 70s and early 80s. Apparently, it was like a fucking free-for-all here. Like, insane.
That's what it sounded like. I mean, and old McDuffin stuff didn't have a problem enjoying his time, because he became, a pretty heavy drinker. And he loved rough sex and crack cocaine and drinking and it sounds like a fucking party, right? Peanut butter crack sandwich. Oh my goodness. Here's one instant that, sent him back. Because here's the thing. Here, let's just make this perfectly clear. Here's the situation. Now, when he was let out, when we said he was paroled, remember, he was on fucking death row. He was convicted of crimes, okay, three murders back in the 60s that
three
we talked about.
Three fucking murders!
He was,
and he gets out!
Right, he gets taken off of death row, given life, then later on given fucking parole. In a matter of 17 fucking years, okay, since that, you know, suspension of the death penalty, okay? And it's 17 years because that happened in 72, you know, in 89, boom, he's out. Beginning of October, he's walking the streets just in time for the holidays. You know, good for him.
Yep.
He can spend it with family. Might not be his own, but.
He's spending it with hookers.
You're right, right.
Three days later, he's back to killing and shit again.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's just you know, just crazy when you really sit down and think about that, you know, somebody on death row, the state has already said this person deserves to fucking die for what they've done. Okay,
right,
yep, your time's
and
up, McDuff. Have a good day. Out.
Right, and that's exactly what Sheriff Parnell McNamara, that's exactly what he was saying. He was like, mark my words, it's going to be, you know, it might be 3 days, it might be 3 weeks, it
He's
might be 3 months, but
yeah.
the bodies are going to start turning up again. And sure enough, yeah, like he was dead fucking on. Three mm-hmm. fucking days later,
yep.
there were bodies turning up.
I think it was in close proximity to the prison, wasn't it? I mean, he wasn't, you know, that far away from the prison, if I'm not mistaken.
And then one of them, because after he'd gotten out, you know, he said, you know, oh, I'm gonna change, I'm gonna do good. He started going to the local technical college here, TSTC,
mm-hmm.
which I actually attended, you know, culinary school there.
Wow.
But that's what he was going there, and then working at the local Quick Pack at nighttime.
Mm.
And
good old Quick
he
Pack.
Ended up,
yeah,
good old Quick Pack, but. He worked at Quick Pack not even like a month, and then ended up quitting there. And then he was right back to his old ways, of course. You know, it was just you know, trying to pull wool over people's eyes. You know, trying
sure.
to oh, he's trying to do better, but he fucking wasn't. He was just doing back to his old stuff.
Well, right. I mean, I think the shit was so bad with him as far as this want and this lust and this need. It was like a drug addiction, you know, to
right.
rape these women, to torture them, to beat the shit out of them, to, you know, eventually kill them. That need was so great, and he just couldn't, you know, fucking turn down the urge anymore. It was just bound to fucking happen. I mean, I think
right.
that pool was too big inside of them. They just seen something, you know. I think some of them, I don't know if it was the Sheriff McNamara, I don't know if it was him or not, but in one of the documentaries I watched, yeah, he said that, one of them said that, you know, he just didn't have any, like, kind of fucking emotion. You knew something was fucking wrong with
yeah.
him. But you just
yeah,
couldn't put your
just,
fucking finger on it. Like, no, this guy is off, dude, you know.
Yeah, he was just like an empty shell.
A shell,
like,
right.
He just said he had no emotion, like, no, you could tell he just said he had no remorse, no, you know, for anything that he'd done.
Right.
Just a cold-blooded, just callous monster.
Yeah, and, you know, and that was before he was released. And, you know, so needless to say, there were a lot of people in law enforcement. There was a lot of people within the, you know, the on the parole board and within the prison system that were looking at each other like, is this really fucking happening? You know, there had
right.
to have been. And, you know, some are probably, you know, with blinders on, like, don't ask questions, just do what you're told, okay?
Right.
Triple homicide, have a good life. Quick Pack's hiring, good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, wow, man. It's like, McDuff, Duff, pass. What? No,
yeah.
Fail him. He doesn't pass.
It's funny that you mentioned the Quick Pack, too, because one of his later victims, one of his
yep.
final victims, she worked at the Quick Pack at nighttime. And since
yep.
he worked there, he knew that there was no security. He knew it was shit. You know, so he knew he could get in and out and not make a sound. So he went in there and kidnapped the woman that was working in there who was pregnant, and ended up taking her hostage and tortured and raped her and murdered her and dumped her in a river or a lake somewhere, a lake near here. And then a fisherman ended up finding her body, you know, days later. But
right. Yeah, I think it's Melissa Northrop. Is that the one you're talking about?
Melissa Ann Northrop.
That, and she was actually the senior manager's wife. And it's said that good old McDuff and stuff. He had this kind of fascination with Melissa. And he said that he mentioned to, I guess, you know, his partners in crime at that point, whoever that would be, maybe the last drifter.
Whirly.
Yeah, Whirly, right? Is that what his name was? Whirly or some shit?
Yeah. Whirly.
He's squirrely whirly.
Good old Whirly.
Good old Whirly, boy, I tell you what.
Good old Whirly.
And that boy has some good work ethic. Old Squirrely Whirly.
Squirrely Whirly. Squirrely Whirly ratted his ass out.
He did, man. What a fake. I guess, you know, would talk to, you know, Whirly and whatnot and be like, man, you know, we could rob this fucking place. You know, I used to work there. We could rob this place. The bitches, you know, that's working there is pretty fucking hot. And then we can take her. And like you said, they ended up, you know, fucking abducting her. And, They launched a little investigation, of course, because she didn't come home that night. And they actually
found
there were some eyewitnesses.
They found his car like a block away at a nearby motel. You know what I mean?
Right.
But he was gone. You know, it's kind of like, why is his car here? But he's gone. So then they kind of put two and two together. You know, given his past record, so they're like, all right, we gotta find this motherfucker.
right, yes. He was a little squirrely himself, because he always seemed to kind of be, you know, kind of like one move ahead of him, you know, every once in a while. You know, he wasn't, I've seen better.
Oh, hell no. he'd always go after really small, petite, brunette women. I mean, he was a big guy,
right.
You know, so was it, he could easily just, you know, like they're saying, he could easily just come up and grab him and throw him in the trunk of a car and, you know, do whatever, you know.
Here's something. This was after the abduction of Northrop. Another body was found in the woods not long after they discovered Melissa's body, and her name was Valencia K. Joshua, a prostitute who was last seen searching for McDuff's dorm room at this technical college. I guess she was inquiring, walking around looking for this guy for whatever reason. Maybe he had some fucking crack and they were going to drink some beers and smoke some crack and get all freaky.
They found her remains on campus because he lived on campus.
Right.
It was on campus deal. Like one of the other students had ended up stumbling upon it because like some of the remains were sticking up out of the ground.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that. Yeah.
It's like, holy shit.
And here's the thing.
Whenever I had heard about him, you know, I was like, well, he was a student out at TSTC and they even found bodies buried out there. I was like, oh, shit.
It seems so obvious.
I was like, that's crazy.
Yeah. And then to think that, you went to school out there for, you know, culinary.
Yeah.
You went to the same school.
I didn't live on campus or anything. Yeah. I mean, it's a technical college. So there's some fucking characters go to that school, let me tell you. So, you know, like, I mean, hell, I went there.
Right. That's funny.
They let me in, for God's sake. So what does that tell you?
Right. Yeah, that speaks volumes, all right?
But yeah.
At this point, yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, I think at this point, and it was either soon after, you know, the Melissa body was discovered. Maybe he was still around when they discovered Valencia's body. Because that was around the same time that they discovered Melissa's. But right around that time, at some point, he had already fled Mexico. Not Mexico, fucking Texas. Okay, he got a new car. He got a fake ID, and he became a garbage collector. So he's trying to start, you know, a new life all over. And I guess I think it had a lot to do with like Melissa's, you know, friends and family or whatnot that kind of pushed to get her story in this case on America's Most Wanted. Because I think they knew who it was, you know, but they had to put it out there like that. That way everybody could on the lookout. And come to find out, yes, that's exactly what the fuck happened. He became America's Most Wanted 208th successful capture. He was pulled over during a garbage stop. Was he working? Is that what he was doing? Was he working?
Yeah, he was at work and they got his ass. Yep.
Wow. Imagine
he was
that.
At work when they got his ass. Yep. Because one of the guys that worked with him was like, saw him on Rick's Most Wanted and was like, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, I work with that sumbitch.
Hey, Charlene, I know this sumbitch. I work for him. I work with this sumbitch.
Sumbitch killer.
This is sumbitch broomstick killer. God damn.
I knew something funny about that character.
Hell yeah, I knew he was a fucking weirdo, but sumbitch. But yeah, that guy fucking ended up turning him in, man, and sure enough, like gave him his fake alias. I can't remember what the hell it was.
I don't remember what it was either. Yeah.
They ran all that shit, and then I guess like he had his prints tied to that. So sure enough, they ended up figuring it out. Oh well, it's fucking him. It's, you know, it's Kenneth McDuff.
Right. So good old McDuff and stuff.
Get old McDuff and stuff. So they went to Oklahoma and got his ass and brought him back to fucking Waco and started processing everything and got the trial going and
he's still after all of this, because there was like overwhelming, you know, strong circumstantial evidence, eyewitness accounts. It just wasn't good on his part. He still fought tooth and nail like he was fucking innocent, like he didn't do anything.
Oh yeah, he denied the whole thing for fucking ever.
I mean, damn near all the way up. I mean, there was an interview that was just, you know, I don't know, maybe a month or so, like one of his last interviews. And it was in 98. I'm dyslexic. No. fucking... where he was still saying no, I didn't do it, you know, I didn't do it, and but yet didn't throughout his time in fucking prison, didn't he also give you know, investigators the, you know, directions to where bodies were?
No, this wasn't until later. I think it was like a week before he was to be executed, he started giving locations.
Right, I thought at some point.
At that point.
Okay.
Yeah, wow. he finally fucking admitted what he had done. Well, with a few of them anyway, not all of them. Like you were saying, like I think they ended up charging him. I think with like five murders, but
right.
He's been suspected of anywhere from 9 to 14.
9 to 14. They think is what I've been seeing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So is this? Go ahead.
Oh, I'm pretty sure. I think it was that they. I think that they did. He was convicted of five of them, though, for sure.
Okay. Yeah. And
I think.
Yeah, his day. He was put to death. Lethal injection. The Huntsville prison. November 18th, 1998. McDuffin stuff was done.
He's done. Dead as a fucking doornail.
And you know what? That still didn't. Some of the victims, family and friends still did not find that satisfactory. And I understand what they're saying. They're saying, man, all he had to do was just go to sleep when he died. My family, my loved ones, you know, their last couple minutes on this fucking earth was fucking torture. You know,
tortured for hours. You know,
yeah, I mean, they didn't have
tortured and raped and just absolutely brutalized, you know.
And so I understand it, but yeah, even they were still, you know, pissed, even in death. And then, you know, there was a big overhaul in Texas. You know, they began to overhaul a lot of their laws and whatnot to make sure that other criminals like McDuffin stuff did not get out on fucking parole. I mean, for fuck's sake, again, he was on death row. He was convicted of a triple fucking homicide. How he could even possibly be considered, how it even went through anyone's mind that this guy is going to be safe and be okay and you know, out walking, you know, the fucking streets. It's just, but they changed a lot of the rules and improved the monitoring upon release. That's what they said the new rules became known as. The McDuff laws. So that whole serial killer case, that's why, you know, it's probably almost like a folklore there in Texas where you guys are at, especially, I guess, the closer you get to, like, the Waco area, like, probably around where you're at. It's almost like it's like Santa Claus, right?
Like a tall tale, right,
yeah.
He's like the boogeyman, you know?
Exactly. More or
less. But yeah, and he's the only at least in Texas that I know of, he's the only inmate to ever be sentenced to be put on death row,
right,
paroled, and then be put on death row again.
Right, yeah, that just doesn't make sense. Wrap your fucking head around that. I mean,
yeah,
I mean,
come on. But again, there was a lot of corruption with political stuff in the prison system at that point in time, and that's what I think. It was those guys just putting cash in their pockets. That's what I think.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the corruption was just all over the place. You know, when it you know, at that time, like you said, there were so many. You know, I mean, it was only getting worse. I mean, because of the corruption, it was causing, you know, these a lot of these criminals that shouldn't walk the streets again. You know, are out just roaming around, and next thing you know, I didn't fucking see that coming. You know what?
Yeah,
oh, another body. Oh, who could have possibly foresaw this happening?
Right, and like I was saying, and he's just one of many.
Yeah.
There were several that were like him that ended up being released.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So
like it was crazy.
I mean that just. And that's why, you know, I kind of dug looking into this guy, because, you know, to think that this one case and, you know, his crimes, you know, along with the corruption and all the bullshit, you know, going on with, you know, the prison system and whatnot, all that combined, man, I mean, changed, you know, the entire, you know, fucking certain parts of their system in an entire state.
Right.
It had that much, you know, hold
that
on.
That much of an impact.
That much of an impact. And it's hard. You'd be hard to fucking, you know, find, I think, another story like that. Yeah, you know, you have murder cases that grip an entire nation via the media. But not so much to the point that
the
laws are fucking
changed. The legal system, right?
Exactly.
Right.
So that's what really got to me. So do people still talk about this case now? Where you're at?
Oh yeah.
I mean,
oh yeah. there's, like I said, I'm sure we'll get into some of these other ones, in some later episodes. But like I do, the more I started looking into stuff about stuff here, because Waco's, everybody think whenever they hear Waco, they think Branch Davidian. Right. You know what I mean? Like, right, that's mostly what it's known for. But dude, there's a whole bunch of murders and serial killers. Like, it's crazy, dude. It's like,
don't sell Waco short, man. We got murders and serial killers up in here.
We got a lot more. We're not just cultists. We got more.
Right? We're not a one-trick pony.
Yeah, exactly. We got more than Dr. Pepper, damn it.
And country music.
But, good old country music.
But yeah.
But yeah, man, there's crazy shit here in Waco.
that would be pretty. I don't know, man. I was once in a while we get a hankering. See, that's one of them Texas terms, ain't it? A hankering.
A hankering.
I got a hankering. A hankering to whittle me some wood. I don't know what you guys do. You sit on your porch and whittle wood. I don't know what you do. Play banjos and guitars and chew on hay. Oh my god!
Oh, shit!
I didn't think it would last this long. But yep, here we.
Oh, there we go.
Right down the shitter. Thank God we're pulling up on close to the end of the show, so we made it this far.
Oh shit!
Oh man, but yeah, it is kind of crazy, man. You know, if you're in your respected state, you know, whatever. You start looking in, next thing you know, oh my God, there was this happened, maybe not right at this moment, but this happened, you know, all around here.
Yeah,
you know?
right down the road.
Right.
Basically, you know what I mean? Like, holy shit.
That's, that kind of shit intrigues me, but I'm sure I'm not alone with some of the, you know, patients in the insane asylum. I know some of them, and I know they're right along with me.
There's some crazy ones.
We got some that should be highly, highly medicated. But anyway, yeah. Any final thoughts on McDuffin stuff? Duff pass. Boo!
Well, man. The broomstick killer was a nasty son of a bitch, man. He was just absolutely brutal. And like we were saying, like, I mean, the whole damn legal system here in Texas was changed because of them. I mean,
yeah.
But, I mean, shit had to change. I mean, like they're saying, they were letting out 150 guys like him a day.
A day. Yeah. Just a bam, day. There you go. On the streets. Bam. You know. I mean, I was going to say pretty much, you know, the same thing. That's what I take away from it. You know, I guess in the long run, well, they got him back in prison. They did their justice, you know. He was put to death. But, you know, not before, you know.
He only had three.
Yeah, he only had three kills that they know of, I guess, that he was convicted of before he was let out on parole. So now you're looking at another 6 to 10 more, you know, I mean, give or take.
Right.
More people had to lose their fucking lives due to...
All because of that.
Oh, yeah. So it's a shame. It's a sad case, as it is one that a lot of good shit came about of some really, really horrible, horrible fucking things, and, you know, people losing their lives, and when all of it could have very well been avoided. All of it.
Exactly.
You know, maybe minus the three, you know,
the first,
from the in the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe that couldn't have been avoided. Who knows? Maybe it could have. But, hey, my friend, the white coats have signaled the The outro.
They're coming with the meds.
Coming with the meds.
They're coming with the meds. Not the shot again. No.
I'll take his.
I don't want to get a plane.
Oh, man, it was fun. It was fun, my friend. And stick around. Don't forget, check out, nightlivingdreads.com for past episodes and to stay up with all of the new episodes. And we'll talk to you next week sometime.
No one knows. We're going to die.